Okay, Parshas Toldos. What I'd like to discuss today is one of the most seminal moments in the Sefer, in the beginning of our history of our forefathers, the moment in which Yaakov purchases the birthright from his brother Esav. Now, we're all familiar with, as the Parsha will develop, the bulk of the Parsha is actually spent on how he actually then went ahead and received the blessing that was entitled to him as the firstborn, in which he dresses up as Esav, and that whole episode. But in the very beginning of the Parsha, we actually find where he purchases it. The episode which we're familiar with, Esav comes home and he's hungry, and Yaakov sells him, or purchases from him, the birthright. So what I'd like to do is go through those few verses. It's maybe four or five different psukim which discuss that actual dialogue, break that down and understand a machlokas between Rashi and the Ramban, understanding what it was that was going on in their conversation about, and their negotiations about this birthright. So let's do that today. Let's start on page 126, which is the beginning of second page into the Parsha. Just to set it up in the context, if you flip back one page, the beginning of the Parsha, of course, begins with Rivka and Yitzchak unable to have children as they daven and beseech Hashem for a child. She, of course, has the twins. We are introduced to Yaakov and Esav. By the time we hit verse 27, the children have grown up. Yaakov is a man who sits in the tents studying, and Esav is a person who is a Yodea Tzayid, a person who is a hunting man, a man of the field. And verse 28, the Torah tells us that Yitzchak loved Esav, for a game was in his mouth, and Rivka loved Yaakov. We discussed that in a previous year, what exactly that meant, and what's the meaning behind Yitzchak liking Esav more, and Rivka seeming to be in love more with her son Yaakov. We will leave that aside for now. Let us pick it up from verse 29, as far as our story goes, for the next four or five verses till the end of the chapter. Says the Torah as follows, Chavtes, Vayozed Yaakov Nazir. So out of nowhere, Yaakov simmered a stew, is the way that it's translated. He boiled up a pot of lentils. Vayavo Esav min ha-sadeh v'hu ayef. And Esav came in from the field, and he was exhausted, he was tired. Now, it's seemingly, I don't know, like all of a sudden Yaakov decided to take up cooking, and he cooks up a stew. We're given zero information, no background as to why this is taking place right now. What's the meaning of this nizid? What's the meaning of this stew? Just that Yaakov stews it up, and Esav comes in famished. Vayomer Esav el Yaakov. Esav turns to Yaakov and says, Haliteini no min ha-adom ha-adom hazeh. Uses quite a, I guess for lack of a better word, barbaric language. He doesn't say, may I have some, please. He doesn't say, smells good, what's in the pot? He says, Haliteini no, pour into me from some of that red stuff. Where he's beyond even calling it by its name. He doesn't refer to it as the nizid, he doesn't refer to it as the stew, he doesn't refer to it as the lentils, he just simply refers to the red stuff, pour it into me, for I am exhausted. Al-Kain Kara Shemo Edom, and therefore they called his name Edom. Edom from the language of Adom, from red. He referred to the stew not by its name, but by its color. So he became known by the name Edom, which is rooted in that same root of the word redness. And the Ramban points out that was a degrading kind of name. People used to make fun of him that for something just red, that he was willing to give up, as we'll see, his birthright, that he was willing to sell it off. And it was a sort of degrading kind of name that they referred to him as Edom. And Esav and his descendants will be known throughout Jewish liturgy now as Edom. For example, there are four different exiles that the Jewish people will be in. The one that we're in right now is known as Golus Edom. It's the exile of Edom, which are the descendants of Esau, which he gets his name from here. Okay, why is Yaakov cooking up this stew? What's with the stew? So before, we're going to get into three major questions, which we're going to address as we go through this, but just to set up a little bit, what's with the stew? Why is Yaakov cooking this? The Torah doesn't tell us. So Rashi tells us. Rashi tells us it's on the second column here in your Rashi, in the middle of Pasuk Lamed, if you want to follow it inside, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines down in the second column. Min ha'adoyim ha'adom, says Rashi, Oso hayom meis Avraham. On this day, Avraham died. So the Torah doesn't tell us why he's cooking up this stew, but the reason is because Yaakov's grandfather, Avraham, died, and that would make his father, Yitzchak, into an avel. His father is now, Yitzchak is now being mourning over his father, Avraham. Says Rashi, why did Avram die on this day? Shelo yira es Esav ben bino yotzei letarbus ra'a. Ve'einzu seva teva sheftichu HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Esav, as he was now getting older, was going off in the wrong direction. And so that Avram should not have to bear to see his grandson going in such a direction, which would not be a fulfillment. Shem promised him good days, that he should live and die in peace and in tranquility. Seeing his grandson in such behavior would not be a fulfillment of that. So Hashem shortened his years by 5 years. And Rashi goes through that we see that Yitzchak will live to be 180, but Avram only lived to be 175, and that was in order that he should leave this world before Esav went off into that. What does that have to do with this stew? Ubishal Yaakov Adoshim Lahavros Esa'ovel. You're all familiar with when a avel comes back from the funeral, there's a meal that's provided by others, by the community, for the avel, the mourner, to eat the first meal upon their return to their house. So Yaakov was preparing the meal that he would serve to his father Yitzchak after the burial of his grandfather and Yitzchak's father, Avraham. V'loma Adoshim asks Rashi the question, why are they lentils? Why do we serve lentils to a mourner? Shedoimos legalgel, similar to a wheel. Shehavelos gilgel hachoizer ba'olam. Avelos, mourning, is something which just, you know, goes around the world. It's a natural part of life. We as right, this is something that that's what life is about. Life is here. It's meaningful, and it will eventually come to an end. And therefore, there's something that's round, has that symbolic meaning to the mourner of, you know, the wheels of life turning as we go through. New generations coming, new generations going, and as it's a sad part of life, obviously, for those of us who mourn lost ones, but part of it, nonetheless, as we see new generations coming and the old generations leaving this world into the world of truth. And the symbolism of the round lentil sort of is that message given over to the mourner. And then Rashi adds a second meaning. Ve'od ma'adoshim ein lahem peh. Lentils don't have a mouth. There's no, if you think it's just a perfectly round, I mean, there's no opening where you would say, oh, this is like an opening or mouth, so to speak, on the bean. Therefore, kach ha'ovel ein lo peh, she'osor ledavel. Similarly, an ovel has no mouth. It's not able to speak. It's almost like forbidden to speak, because a person in a state of loss doesn't have the wherewithal to be able to express that which is going on. And so we tell an avel, the halachas, don't speak. And we observe this much less in today's practice than it once was in the strict level of the law. They almost like wouldn't speak for the first day, or up to like 3 days. It was much more strict as far as what an avel would be allowed to even talk about at all, as far as just not having a mouth. You're not in a place to be able to speak in dialogue about what it is that has gone on. And therefore, Rashi concludes, the minhag is to give an ovel eggs, because the eggs share that round quality, and they have no mouth. The egg shares that in which it's totally whole, it's complete, there's no opening to it, and therefore, and it's round, and it shares that same two symbolic meanings of being something that just as it rolls along, life rolls along, and it does. You don't have the mouth to be able to speak, and that's why eggs and lentils are traditionally used in that context of avelus. Okay. In any case, that explains why Yaakov was cooking the lentil stew. Okay, let's go on. So Yaakov, Esav sees that. Esav desires to eat. He comes in hungry, and Yaakov responds in Pasuk Lamed Aleph in 31. Vayomer Yaakov michra chayoyim es bechoyros chali. Yaakov, so sell as this day your birthright to me. Now that phrase "as this day" is an odd phrase. What does it mean? Sell as this day your birthright to me. Rashi and the Ramban here differ exactly as to the simple meaning of the pasuk. The Ramban simply says what it means is, like, sell, it was a phrase that was used, sell today immediately, like sell it right now. And that was the Hebrew way of saying that, mikra chayom, like sell it right now immediately. Whereas Rashi understood it more in the sense of, just as the day is clear, I want you to sell to me an unequivocal sale that you'll never be able to have any claims upon. Mikra chayom, sell as the day is clear, sell to me a type of sale that's unequivocal that you won't have any claims on later. Okay, parenthetical just in terms of the explanation of the words. But Yaakov asks for his birthright. Now here we would ask question number one, and this is the kind of question which is such an obvious question, but we're so familiar with this story that it doesn't necessarily strike us. But if you look at this story, and you were reading this story for the first time, what question would you ask? A simple question. What would you ask at this point?
Can anyone really sell the birthright?
Okay, we're going to ask that question. We're going to ask that later, and that's a little bit even of a more complex question. I'm asking for an even more basic question of the story. We'll get to that question.
How could he sell it?
That same question.
Okay.
Like, can you sell it? How can you sell it? There's a more basic question here.
Why does he?
Right? Like, where is this coming from? Like, what is the birthright that here you have a brother, he comes in from the field hungry, he wants food, starving, he's famished, so famished that his language is, just pour it into me. And Yaakov says, I want your birthright. What's the meaning, what's the symbolism, what does it represent, this birthright? Now we're going to get to the question of how could he sell. That's going to be a much more technical or philosophical question, which we'll get to. But the first one, we take this question for granted because we know what it represents. We know the whole story. We've been through this many times. But question number one is simply, what does this birthright represent that Yaakov has clearly had this in his back pocket for a good number of years, waiting for an opportunity to be able to pounce on this? What is he after? What does it mean to have or not to have this concept of the birthright? Now, the first thing that came to my mind just in thinking about this, again, which is an approach from after a lot of knowledge, the first thing when I think about a birthright is when it comes to an inheritance. And what is it? What's the meaning of a birthright? What is the
legacy, inheritance?
The first one saying gets double the.
So it gets double. I was thinking more like what Dina was saying. Not so much legacy. I was thinking you get double the portion. Torah has very clear laws regarding inheritance. If there's not a will that's written, the default position is very clear in the Torah. And this is what we do in the absence of a clear command from the deceased. So, and the Bechor, the eldest son, if the eldest child is a son, would get double. So, okay, that's what he's after. We're going to see that none of the commentators go that route. That's not what Yaakov was after. That's not what the dialogue was about. There was something much more significant and meaningful about what it represented to have this status of the Bechor. Right now, again, we're going to assume that you can sell it. But assuming that you can, that Yaakov was after. So question number one on the table is going to be, what was Yaakov after when he wanted the sale of the birthright?
Oh, kind of mastery over his brother. He was now going to be the head of the family. The next brother would have to listen to him.
Okay. We'll get to some of those ideas. Yeah.
Well, you're suggesting that it could be a typical sibling thing, that one brother has something the other one wants, and you just wait until that person is the most vulnerable, and you're in the best bargaining position, and you go right after it.
Yeah.
And brothers and sisters do that to each other.
The Ramban is going to say that explicitly. Yeah, 100%.
Does it mostly have to do with the rites of burial of the Mara family?
We're not going to see that particular argument, but we'll see. I want to put it in more as a question rather than take an answer. Clearly, in other words, as you read this story, if you were to read it for the first time, you would be struck, and again, we're not because we're so familiar with this, okay, two brothers, older brother comes home tired and hungry, and the other says, give me your firstborn rights. Like, where's this coming from? What is he after that's the first thing that he says, that's what I want? Okay, now let's read their dialogue, the next three verses, and then let's go back and read Rashi and the Ramban's approach to these psukim. How does the Esav respond? So, you know, again, we're familiar with this, but if you're thinking, again, reading this for the first time, so I'm hungry, I want food, my brother has the food that I want, and now what he wants me to do is to sell him my firstborn rights. That's what he wants me to do. So what response would we expect, or would we think, well, what does Esav give us as a response to this? Vayomer Esav, Lamed Beis 32. Hine hanochi holech lamos, the lama zeli b'chora. Look, I am going to die, so of what use to me is a birthright? I'm going to die anyway, so what do I need this birthright for? Question number two we're going to have to deal with is, whatever Yaakov was after, what does Esav mean when he says, sure, I'll sell it to you, because I'm going to die anyway, so of what value to me is a birthright since I am going to die? That'll be question number two. Vayomer Yaakov, hishovali kayom. So Yaakov says, swear to me. The Ramban explains the reason why Yaakov asks for the vow is because Esav never definitively said, yes, I will sell it to you. Esav's response simply was, look, I'm going to die anyway, what do I need it for? Yaakov says, no, I want more than that. I want you to say, yes, I will sell you my birthright. So Yaakov says, swear to me that you'll do it. Vayishavolo, so he swore to him. Vayimkor es b'choraso liYaakov. And Esav sold his firstborn rights, his rights to the birthright, to Yaakov. What did he sell it for? How do you know that? How do you know that? Okay, let's look at the next pasuk. Yaakov gave to Esav lechem unezid adoshim. He gave him the bread and lentil stew, and he ate and he drank. He got up and he left. And Esav spurned the birthright. He disparaged it. Different translations for exactly. Vayivez Esav esav b'chayr is clearly uninterested. So I asked, what did Yaakov sell the firstborn rights for? So he answered, the stew. And how do you know that?
I think so.
Where does it say that? Let's go back over it.
It says for a pot of meat.
Where does it say that?
Verse 34.
He gave up his precious birthright for a pot of beans.
Where does it say that?
Right here.
Oh, you're in the foot. Oh, no. And you're looking underneath that line that cuts this page in half.
Okay.
Oh, we caught you. That was an easy one. I'm like, right? It didn't say that in my copy anywhere. Okay, let's go back over what it says. Yaakov Esav says in verse 30, Esav asks for food. Yaakov says, sell your birthright to me. For what?
For the food.
Does it say that?
No.
No, it doesn't say that. Just sell it to me. Esav says, hey, I'm going to die anyway. What do I care about a birthright? Yaakov says, swear to me that you'll sell it. And in verse 33 it says, and he sold his birthright to Yaakov. For what?
No, it's not so clear.
Right? Does it say what he sold it for? And then it says, and Yaakov gave to Esav food. So the Ramban quotes two opinions as to how to understand these verses. The first opinion that he quotes is the one which all of you are familiar with, probably because it says it in that little footnote down there in your reading. And the story that we're all familiar with is that he sold it for the pot of soup. Now, it does not say that in the text of the Chumash, that's what the price was of the sale. It simply says that Esav was hungry, and this is what you mentioned about sort of taking advantage of your sibling when they're in a...
Extremist.
Well, actually, I would say on the other, I'll hold off on that comment for a second. This is the simple meaning which we for sure the most familiar with. The Ramban quotes it. I'm not saying it's not. The Ramban says that as an approach to understand this. He was hungry. Yaakov says, "Sell it to me for this food. I will give you this food if you sell me the birthright." Esav agrees, and for the price of the soup, he then sold over his birthright. The Ramban does quote a second pshat. That says, it doesn't say that. He actually sold it to him for money. It's just that he withheld the food and said, oh, you're hungry? Well, I've always wanted to talk to you about your birthright, and I'd like for you to sell it to me. Obviously, for money. The Torah just doesn't tell us how much money, because it's an irrelevant piece of information for us. And he did, and then Yaakov gave him what to eat. And in that approach, the Ramban is clearly saying that's in a matter of... He had him at a disadvantage in which Esav was hungry, desiring food, negotiated a deal for the birthright, but it actually was sold for money. and then he gave him the food. And it's fascinating, when you actually read back into the Psukim, it is not clear, the Torah does not state that the cost of the birthright was the food. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that there. The Rabban presents the two opinions, and again, the one that we are most familiar with, and certainly the ones that we found there in the footnotes on the bottom, is that he did actually sell it for the food, but to be aware of the fact that that wasn't the only, or is not the only approach that the Ramban presents. Okay, I want to ask one last question before we go back over Rashi and the Ramban's approach to the whole story. At the very last verse of the story, Yaakov, after giving Esav bread and the soup, the Torah describes Esav, he ate and he drank. Vayochal vayesht, vayokam vayelach, he got up and he left. Vayivez Esav es habuchoyer, and Esav spurned the birthright. He disparaged it. He was uninterested in it. What's the meaning of that? That he was uninterested and he spurned it. He was disparaging towards it. And why is that said at the end? I would have thought that would be something to have described in the beginning, during the negotiations. I'm really not interested in it. The Torah saves that phrase.
He's already eaten, and he still doesn't care about it.
Okay, so you'd say, in other words, the Torah wants to show that even after he was full, even after, so it wasn't just that he, because he was in such a disadvantage, that's why he sold it. Even after he had his full, and he ate, and he drank, and now he was back on his way, he still disparaged of it, he still had no interest, and didn't care about it. Okay, the Ramban is going to be bothered by why this phrase is told to us at the end of the story when it really should have been earlier in describing his relationship to the birthright. But that'll be question number three on the table. Question number one, what does the birthright represent that Yaakov so clearly has been waiting for an opportunity, and as soon as he gets it, he says, sell me your birthright. What does that birthright represent? Question number two, what is Esav's response of, I'm going to die anyway, so who cares? I'll sell it to you. And number three, what's the meaning that Esav, at the end of the story, the last phrase that Esav was disparaging towards it was spurned his birthright. Rashi and the Ramban are going to have a different approach, and we'll see if we could even tie them a little bit closer together as we get to the very end. Okay, ready? Let's go. Let's learn Rashi. Rashi says as follows. Let us start with four lines from the bottom of the second column on page 126. 126, four lines from the bottom. We'll start with Rashi's commentary. Now, Rashi's commentary is probably one that we're most familiar with over the years. Rashi says as follows, B'choy roscha, sell me your firstborn rights, l'fisha ha'avoda b'vechoros. Because the avoda, the service, referring to the service in the Beis HaMikdash, the rights to serve in the Beis HaMikdash belonged to the firstborn. Therefore, Omar Yaakov said, "Ein Rosh Hazeh Kedai Sheyakriv LaHakadosh Baruch Hu." It is not befitting that this wicked person, my brother Esav, should have the rights to serve in the holy temple before Hashem. Shouldn't have the rights to serve him, and therefore I want to buy that from him, so that the avoda, that the service, should be in my generations and not in his. So what's Yaakov after? That he understood that the rights of the avoda, the rights of the service, in other words, the Bechor eventually lost this, right? And it was given to the Shevet Levi, and the Kohanim took it over. But that was only after the episode of the sin of the golden calf. Before that point, it would have been the rights of the Bechor. Every family would have had their own Bechor. Every family would have a firstborn, and that firstborn would be the one to go to the Beis HaMikdash. That firstborn would be the one to go and serve. And as opposed to what we have today, the tribe of the Kohen, every family would have its own Kohen. It would have its spiritual beacon of light that would serve in the Beis HaMikdash and impact and affect the entire family. That was the system that it was initially going to be. And Yaakov says, this is ridiculous that my brother Esav should be in charge of that. And therefore, that's what he's after. When he sees the path that his brother is on, Yaakov says, I need to have this right, this firstborn right of the avoda, of the service, needs to be in my hands. What's Esav's response when Yaakov says, according to Rashi, sell me this firstborn right? Three lines from the bottom. Hinei anochi holeich lamos. Esav says, listen, I'm going to die. starting at, from the last line, vote Omar Esav Mativa Shalavodazu. Esav says, what's the nature of this type of avoda? You're telling me you want to purchase this because the rights of service are a firstborn right. What's it like? Says Yaakov, Omar Lay, Kama Azharos, Ve'onshin, Umisos Tuluyinbo. Oh, it's very difficult. Many warnings, death penalties, all sorts of punishments are all contingent upon this service. Ka'osa Shishaninu, Elohen Shebemisa. As the, so to speak, like quotes the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, the Mishnah describes, these are the types of behaviors when you're serving the Beis HaMikdash that are punishable by death. Shtuya Yayinu, Prure Rosh, if you're drunk in wine or your hair isn't, there are all sorts of rules and regulations about it, what a Kohen must observe when he's in the Beis HaMikdash. And what's the punishment for violating most of these rules? It's a serious offense. You're working in the Beis HaMikdash, it's a death penalty. So yeah, Esav says to Yaakov, so like, what's this all about? Yaakov says, oh, it's real serious. Real serious. Lots of death penalties involved and all sorts of rules and regulations and drinking and this and that. Says Esav, Omar ani holech lamus al yada. Im kein ma chofetz li baza. Esav, I'm going to die from this. What do I want this for? Go ahead, you can have it. So how does Rashi, this is based on a medrash obviously, how does Rashi interpret the dialogue between Yaakov and Esav at this point? Esav comes in famished. Yaakov says, sell me the bechorah. What's Yaakov after? He's after the rights of the avodah. He's after the rights of the service. Esav's response, Anochi Halech Lamos, I'm going to die. What's that meaning? That's the end of the dialogue where Esav asked, what's this about? Yaakov responds, whoa, it's real serious. I mean, you got to be real careful, man, when you're in the Beis HaMikdash. You can die. Esav says, I can't handle that. I'm going to die. I don't want it. I'll sell it to you. Now, parenthetically, what does this dialogue remind you of? When Yaakov says, I want the firstborn right, and Esav says, well, what's in it?
Not a
Kedis Yitzchak.
Brother, Abraham, when Hashem offered the commandments, yes, to all the other nations,
the Revolver, Rav Shlomo Volber points out, this dialogue that Rashi points out is very parallel to what the sages say when Hashem, before He gave us the Torah, went around to all the nations and said, do you want this gift of mine? And their response was, no. What's their response?
What's
in it? And Hashem says to each nation something that will be difficult for them to keep, and they say, oh, no thanks, I don't want it. Very parallel, that's rooted back, says the Revolver, points out from his Rashi, rooted all the way back to when Yaakov says to Esav, I want your firstborn rights, and Esav says, what's it about? Yaakov says, ooh, lots of death involved. It's very dangerous and scary profession to be the one who has to serve. And Esav says, no thanks. Very parallel. The roots of that dialogue that Hashem has with all the other nations, Revolver points out, is rooted in the way Rashi describes this dialogue between Yaakov and Esav hundreds of years before. Very interesting insight. Moving along, and then we have the last phrase, Vayivez Esav Eshav B'choyran. After Esav ate and drank, he got up and he left, and now the Torah tells us that he spurned the birthright. Why is this mentioned here? So we had a suggestion just to show you that even when he was full and he wasn't hungry, he still wasn't interested. So Rashi makes a very similar comment two lines down on page 128. Rashi says, Vayivez Esav, Heid HaKosov Al Risho. The Torah is testifying to his wickedness, Shebiza Avodoso Shalmakom, that he disparaged and spurned the ability to serve Hashem. So that this isn't really part of the story, this is after the story, it comes afterwards. It's not why he sold it, but it's just testifying. The Torah is saying at the end of the story, I'm showing you how wicked Esav was, that he even spurned, disparaged, was totally disinterested in the ability, the chance to serve Hashem, that at the end of the story, the Torah, he didn't care, could care less. He sold it, no regrets, not interested, spurned the whole thing. So that in Rashi's approach, what we have here is a dialogue over the ability to serve. Yaakov says, sell it to me because this right is important and I want to have it. Esav says, what's in it? Oh, hard to keep, not interested, I'm going to die from it anyway. Anochi holech lamus, take it. And then the Torah testifies to his rishus, to his evilness, not interested, I could care less that I just sold it. That's how Rashi learns the dialogue. The Ramban takes a different approach. The Ramban has a different approach. The Ramban says, Ramban says as follows. He has a very lengthy discussion about this, and I'm just going to cut and paste out of that. The Ramban discusses the ability to inherit the double portion, because he's coming off of a comment from the Ibn Ezra, who learns that really is the whole thing was finances, and Yaakov and Yitzchak didn't have a lot of money. He gets into the whole discussion, which I'm going to leave aside. But the Ramban starts off by saying, I want you to know that the idea of inheriting a double portion, that started when the Torah was given. That didn't exist in antiquity before the Torah was given. They didn't have such a concept. So if it wasn't a double portion, what was everybody after when it came to the firstborn rights? What was that about? Says the Ramban, Rak linchol ma'alos ha'av ushra rasa. What you used to inherit was the eminence and the authority of the father. So the father would have a certain place, a certain stature, a certain eminence, and that would be handed over to the firstborn son. That you should have the honor and the status over your younger brother. Somebody mentioned here that idea. In other words, which brother is going to be in charge? That says in Ramban, that's what it was about. It wasn't about the rights to serve Hashem, you know, hundreds of years later in the Beis HaMikdash, and who would have that inherit. It was about right now, today, tomorrow, who's going to inherit dad's status? Yitzchak was clearly a man of stature, and a father would give over to his son, his firstborn son, that eminence, that stature, the honor, the status that's given over, and the firstborn son was in charge of that. And Yaakov was after that. That's what he wanted. He wanted that stature. Now, obviously, whoever had that stature would be entitled to the brachas that Yitzchak was going to bestow upon his children later. Depending on who had that stature, would clearly get a different blessing from his father, because you pass on to the son who's going to inherit that stature the appropriate bracha. And the Ramban points out, that's why you'll see when blessings are given, the firstborn status plays a prominent role. When Esav comes in at the end of this parsha to get his bracha, how does he introduce himself to his father? Now remember, his father simply says to him, Esav, I want to give you a bracha, I'm going to die, go bring me some food and I'll give it to you. When Esav walks in with the food, how does he introduce himself? Ani bincha b'chayrecha. I am your son, your eldest son, your firstborn. Why is that relevant? Because I am the one who's supposed to inherit your stature and your status symbol and your eminence. So here I am, I'm ready for that bracha. If you remember at the end of Sefer Bereishis, when Yaakov is going to die, he calls in his sons and Yosef's two sons, Ephraim and Menashe, and he gives the bracha and he crosses his hands. What's Yosef's response? No, Dad, this one is the firstborn. The firstborn was supposed to be the one to inherit that status, and therefore that plays a role in the blessings, regardless of which one was inherently greater. But he's the firstborn. He's the one who's supposed to inherit that eminence, that stature. And therefore, that's what it plays a role. And Yaakov was after that. Yaakov says, that's the status that I want you to sell me. The ability to inherit dad's rights, his honor, his prestige, and that eminence. So how does Esav respond, according to Ramban? So now, according to Ramban, the dialogue is more along the lines of, Yaakov says, sell me the rights to be that chosen child. Esav says, I'm going to die. What benefit is there to me having this firstborn status? So the Ramban is not going to look like Rashi does, that it has to do with the ability to serve and all of the intricate laws contingent upon that, because that's not what the dialogue is about. So how does the Ramban explain, what does it mean when Esav says, well, I'm going to die, so what do I need this status? The Ramban says, I have a much more simple shot, based on the simple meaning of the story. What was Esav's profession? He was a hunter. Says the Ramban, Kfar Omar Hatam, the reason why Esav was uninterested in the Bechor is stated clearly. He was going to die in his profession of hunting wild animals. It was most likely that he would in fact die during the lifetime of his father Yitzchak. The bracha only has meaning after the father dies. Who is he going to leave his legacy towards? Who's going to take that status? Says Esav, if that's what you're after, the status of which son is going to take over in dad's place, it has no meaning to me. Anochi holech lamus. I am going to die. It has no value to me since I'm most likely going to die before dad dies anyway. Matola li abrocha. Of what value is it to me to have this blessing? What about the third? In other words, in the Ramban, the first two questions we asked, what was Yaakov after? He was after the eminence, after the status. What's Esav's meaning when he says, I'm going to die? I'm going to die anyway. My profession is one, there's a huge occupational hazard, so who cares about it? Says the Ramban, why does the Torah tell us at the end of the story, after he ate and he drank and he went out, he got up and he left, then the Torah tells us that he spurned the firstborn rights? Why does it tell us only after all of those verbs of eating and drinking and getting up and leaving? Says the Ramban, to tell you, Zu sibas bizui habachor, this is the reason why he spurned it. Ki ein chefetz b'ksilim, the Ramban has such a beautiful language, ein chefetz b'ksilim, ksilim are fools, the word that we find in Mishle very often. There is no desire in the fools, rak sheyoichlu v'yishtu v'yasu chesam b'itam, just that they should eat and drink and do their desires, fulfill that which they want, b'itam, in the moment. Vayochal vayesh, he ate, he drank, he got up and he left. Where did he go? Back to the fields,
hunting.
Back to hunting. That's all he was interested in. V'lo yachushu liyom machar, they are not concerned with tomorrow. Says the Ramban, that's what the Torah is telling you. He says, eminence is at stake, the status, the stature. Yaakov says, I want it. Esau says, I'm going to die anyway. So he ate, he drank, and he headed back to the fields, and he spurned the firstborn right. Says the Ramban, that's telling you why. He couldn't see past today. He had no interest in looking beyond what was in front of him right now, eating, getting myself back up to my strength and energy, so I could head back into the field, so I'll have more to eat. But don't you know, if you'll hold off for another couple of weeks, couple of months, couple of years, Dad's getting old. At some point he's going to inherit, like, there's like a lot at stake here. Not interested. The seal, says the Ramban, the fool can only see today. He can only see what he needs today and has no ability, v'lo yachushu liyom machar, is uninterested in what will be in the future. And that's the reason Vayivez Esav Esav Bechorah, why he disparaged it, because it was something in the future. It was uninteresting to him because it doesn't help him today. There was a great study which I forgot to look up. I meant to look stuff before. I totally forgot. Maybe some of you will remember it. Where they asked kids. They asked kids the same question. They said, would you like one chocolate bar now or three chocolate bars in an hour? Something along those lines. I don't remember what exactly the example was. Something along those lines. And they did a study where they, you know, took 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds. At what age does a child have the ability to look at this and say, I'd rather wait because the value of waiting will be of greater benefit to me? And they did this fantastic study. There's a certain point where the development of a child, such a simple equation, begins to make sense. At a certain age, the child says, 3 candy bars in an hour, that's an hour from now. I'll take my candy bar now. And then you hit a certain point where, oh, I get it. It's worth it for me to wait an hour because I'll get 3. Great, fascinating insight. Well, we have the same study taking place in our lives all the time versus immediate gratification now versus being able to wait and getting it later. But it's not so simple as candy bars, and no one is dangling them in front of you saying, would you like the one candy bar now or 3 in an hour? It's, what do you want to do with your investments? How do you want to prepare for your spiritual future? We have eternity at stake here. And we have another, when you really get down to it, that's really what it's about of, well, do you want your pleasures of life now, or do you want far greater than that forever? But not now, later. And I don't see 3 candy bars in front of me. So that's a much more complex and sophisticated question that we deal with on a daily level of, do I want my cake now, or am I going to give up on what it is now, but I'll get much more later? And says the Ramban, Esav couldn't see that. He couldn't see this idea of inheriting stature, inheriting eminence, inheriting this right of the firstborn of Avram, Yitzhak. Who's going to be the next one on that line? Right now it's either my food, or it's something you're talking about down the road. I'm not there, I don't hear it, I'm not interested in that. And Esav wasn't able to see that. Vayiva is Esav, so he spurned the brothers. This is meaningless to me. And this is really the task that all of us deal with on a daily level, versus the things that we need right now, versus giving up on that because there's something greater at stake at being able to wait. And if anyone is familiar with that study, I'd love to. I didn't have a chance, but it's one of those well-known psychological studies they did in developing children's minds as they develop, being able to postpone gratification, because the rewards for postponement are greater. And we can almost like summarize all of our human existence from a Jewish perspective is about that.
Do you remember in the study which age they started realizing?
I think it was like 27. And that's, I don't remember what it was. But there's, you know, there's that certain point, yeah.
Thank you so much for this. Would we happen to know when you were referring to at the demise of someone and not speaking for 3 days, do we know if that has any connection with the soul hovering around the remains for 3 days?
Oh, I don't know.
After?
I don't know. It might. My simple understanding of that is just the pain and the loss is so great that there are circumstances where when there are no words, so don't say any. I think silence is better than saying something that you either don't mean, don't regret, or don't know what you're saying. So in times of immense emotion, don't say anything. We find that idea both in intense love and in intense pain, where often words are clumsy and words are limiting when the emotions are so enormous, it's almost like painful to try to cram the emotion that I'm feeling into these puny words. So we just say, so don't. Leave it unsaid. And that would be my understanding of why, at a time of intense mourning, we don't speak. We give eggs and lentils that don't have a mouth because there is nothing to say, so whatever I say will fall short. So instead of falling short and causing more pain, you leave it unsaid. And I try to say this as many times as I can. I'll take this opportunity now. When you go to a shiva house, please do not feel that you will give comfort through your words. You will give comfort through your presence. And if you walk into a shiva house and you never open your mouth, do not feel like that was a meaningless visit or you didn't accomplish what you needed to give. There are very often times where just knowing that the person is there with you is the greatest sense of support that you can give. And very often the words we have are clumsy. And people often say to me when I visit them in my role as a rabbi, like, I could write a book on the stupid things people say, on the hurtful things they say. They're trying so hard to be nice and to say something comforting, but the words just come out so clumsily that they're not really helping anything. And so keep it shut. Your presence there's a young fellow about my age who, Rachmana Litzlan, suffered the loss of a child. It's, you know, horrible. And he has said publicly, I've heard him speak about this, that the greatest comfort that he received from his visitors during his week of Shiva, was a beautiful, like a 2-year-old girl, I remember what had happened. Somebody walked in, sat there silent for a while, and before he left, the visitor asked if this young father had a picture of his daughter. And he handed him a little picture, and the visitor took the picture, looked at it, and cried, handed it back, and left. And he has said, I did not receive comfort from anyone as much as that experience. Like, not a word was said. You know, the only words were, like, do you have a picture? That was it. He just looked at the picture, he cried with him, handed the picture back, and got up and left. Are there any words that could have done more than that?
Yeah, I'm crying right now.
Right, I mean. So, and that's why we give eggs and we give the lentils. The symbolic meaning is there are no words, so don't say them. Just be there with the person. You know, whether or not it's crying or not crying or just the presence is really very often the most powerful thing that that we have to offer. Well, that took a turn I wasn't expecting. Those of you who are not, sorry about that, who aren't ready to be slammed with an emotional story, I apologize. Let me finish with one last thought. So I had understood this to be a dispute between Rashi and the Ramban, as I just expressed to you, that Rashi understood the dialogue in the story was about the rights of the firstborn, the rights to serve, the rights to be in the Beis HaMikdash and elsewhere up to that, until before the Beis HaMikdash, to be the one to serve Hashem. And Esau's response is, I'm going to die anyway, I can't handle that responsibility, so I don't want it. And the Ramban's approach was, sell me the stature, the status of the firstborn, and Esau's response is, I'm not going to live long enough because I don't care about that, I'm going to die anyway, so I'll give it to you. So I viewed it as that kind of dispute. I saw last night that the Maral comments on this whole discussion. Maral asks a question that two of you guys asked earlier on Rashi, Rashi who says he was selling the rights of service, the Maharal asks, wait a minute, you can't do this. Any Kohanim here? Kohen, wife of a Kohen? Right. Is a Kohen allowed to sell his rights? Right. Is a Kohen allowed to sell his rights to serve in the Beis HaMikdash? Of course not. There's no, a Kohen's not allowed to sell that.
That's,
what's that?
It's
impossible. It's his own rights to work, but he can't sell it. Right? I can't get up there and say, listen, I'm in some financial difficulties. I'd like to auction off, you know, for this year only, $10,000, you can be a Kohen. No such thing. So the Maharal asks on Rashi, Rashi who understands that the meaning was to sell the rights to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, that's what the dialogue was about. So Maharal asks, you can't do that. You've never heard of such a thing. Says the Maharal, fascinating answer, which to me really just tied this whole thing in together. Says the Maharal, hold on a second. Ooh. Past it. Sorry. Here it is. Okay. My shaykh mechir b'v'choyer. It's not shaykh to have a sale in this firstborn right. As he asks the question that no Kohen has the right to do that. Answers the Maharal as follows. Aval kodem. Says the Maharal, that rule only applies after the Torah is given, and the Torah appointed the Kohen to be in charge of the service. Listen to this, Aval Kodem Matan Torah, but before the Torah was given, Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, all the generations that lived up to Mitzrayim, through Mitzrayim, until the Torah was given, Shehaisa HaAvoda B'Vechoros, where the service was originally done by who? By the firstborn. Why was it done by the firstborn more than anybody else who wanted to? Dipnei shehu ro'oi lekavod. Because the firstborn was the one most fit for that status and for that honor. We don't find that the Torah appointed the firstborn as the one to do the service, just that it made the most sense. The firstborn was the most honored, the one with the greatest level of stature in the family, and therefore it was most appropriate that he should be the one with that status and stature to do the service. Therefore, says the Maharal, he can sell that, because that's his honor that he's selling. If the Torah appoints you and says, you, Kohen, you serve me, I don't have a right to sell that. The Torah gave me this honor, the Torah gave me this privilege, it's not sellable. But if the only reason why I'm the one in my family doing it is because as the firstborn I have the greatest honor and stature in my family, so I can sell the right to have the greatest honor and stature in my family. And therefore, it was something that was able to be sold. Now the Maharal is dealing from a very technical question. He's answering your question of, you can't sell that. Says the Maharal, you can, because since it was the rights of the firstborn that was being sold, not the rights of a Kohen, and the firstborn only has those rights because of his stature, so if I'm the one with a stature, I can sell my stature. I'm allowed to do that. What comes out, according to the Maharal, is that really the Ramban and Rashi are saying very similar things. The Ramban held that the entire discussion was about selling that status symbol. Rashi held the discussion was about selling the rights of the service. But the rights of the service were only because you were the holder of that status symbol. So that at the end of the day, really all the commentators, both Rashi and the Ramban, agreeing, what was it about? When Yaakov says, sell me the firstborn right, what it comes down to was, sell me your status. Sell me the stature, the eminence, the honor, the status of being the firstborn. Rashi understood, really at its core, was the right to serve. But that only was about selling me the status to have that right. Whereas the Ramban was just on a more simple level, just about selling that right. But it really, according to everybody, comes down to the ability to sell the rights of the firstborn, to have that stature status. The eminence of the father passed down to the oldest son is really what it comes down to on a certain level, according to both of them, which Esav does. And then Yaakov has to make sure that he receives the appropriate blessing by going through the back half of the parasha, where he dresses himself up as Esav, and Yitzchak gives him his stamp of approval. At the end of the day, when he discovers what happens, he says, oh, you sold him the rights, then I have in fact given the blessing to the appropriate one, because he then has bought the rights of that status, and I have therefore given that blessing to the appropriate son. Okay, that's it for today on Parshas Toldos.